Warning, this podcast contains words that are going to come out of my mouth that you don't want to hear your children use in front of their teacher. Welcome to HR Talk with Ricky and JC. This is the face of the franchise. You know, if you're an ugly dude and you have a girlfriend and you want to keep her, you have two options. You make a lot of money or learn how to cook.
How will you motivate your employees?
And that, ladies and gentlemen, the face of the franchise to kick things off here on the HR Talk Podcast. Welcome back. I'm JC going across the end of the camera down in sunny Florida, central Florida, central sunny Florida, Ricky Baez.
That's a lot of sunnies and centrals.
Dude, you got a lot going on down there.
I do. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to see you bright and early on this fine, crisp, sunny Sunday, super big game day. From what we're allowed to say, we can't say the word Super Bowl referring to the Super Bowl, so we'll just call it the Super Big Game.
What? Why can't we say that?
Why can't we say Super Bowl?
Yeah, why can't we say Super Bowl?
Yeah, it's something to do with like the proper endorsement of it and like the NFL giving you authorization to use the word Super Bowl. So we're just going to refer to it as the Super Big Game Bowl Day.
Got it. I'm good with that.
If that's
so
fine.
It went from the name to a phrase.
All yes. Right. I'm good with that. There might be some emotional awareness or something related. Dude, I don't know. I don't know who got offended by what along the way with that one, you know, but I'm sure there's a lot of money behind it. So we're just going to leave that alone, you know.
President,
hey,
I'm
so
good.
How you been? You know, it's been a busy week. You and I have talked a lot this week, which I'm thankful for, you know. I mean, we do talk periodically, but we did throw some stuff back and forth. How are you shaking? What's going on?
We did. You know what? I think for to get content for the show, it would be a good idea to just, as soon as we just start talking, whatever we are talking about, just start recording. Because some of the stuff we talk about offline is way better than the actual show. And at the end of the conversation, we're like, shit, we should have recorded that.
Great idea. That's a fantastic idea. We just keep the microphones on us at all times. Hey, Google. No, yeah, I shouldn't say that. Everything
say
just
that.
Went off, right?
Everything would go off in my office here. No, everything's good, man. Everything's good. We had a, I know you guys up there had a really bad cold snap. I know we got outside of it down here. For us, dude, it was like 47 some days. So for us, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, shocking. Cold snap. So cold snap, we definitely did get down to about minus like 15 at nighttime. But during the day, I'll never forget the other day there. As the blizzard was hitting my region, the winds were approximately 40 miles an hour. They were nailing us. There was light snow, and I had the call inside the house, right? So the day job had shut down. There was no operations taking place, so I'm at home. I wake up, and the other humans here turn to me and say, hey, go downstairs and look in the basement. Now, mind you, I'm on the back end of like having to put in a new sump pump because I had 5 to 6 inches of water down there. So there's a $2,500 bill. And then now I'm worried and concerned there's something more going on. And now I've got snow coming into the basement through the foundation. And it was coming in right around where the pipes go out and also around some of the windows that were recently installed. And, you know, I didn't even think twice about it. I was like, yeah, I'm paying these guys. They're going to come over, get this taken care of. Nothing to worry about. Go down there. And it's not insulated. There was nothing in there. And there were large gaps that were letting the snow fly directly into the house. So in the middle of the blizzard, I suited up. I hop in the truck, I drive down, buy some spray foam, and drive back. Normally, it's about a 10-15 minute drive. Took me an hour 15.
In minus 15 degree weather.
And check this out. I'm driving down the road, and I reach a point where I literally have no idea where I am. I'm driving based off of muscle memory at this point. Were the roads completely closed? Was there a ban in effect yet? No. You know, that was coming. But I'm about a car length away from a red light, and I couldn't even see the red light was there, so I wasn't 100% sure where I was, you know? Luckily, I was able to hit the brakes and not hit the truck that was pulling out in front of me at that time. Things were good. But, yeah, a lot of stress. So,
wow.
Got the spray foam. The basement's all set. No more snow or water coming in there, and Fingers crossed, it's all good. The melt is taking place. We're currently up into the 40s right now, just on the backside of some tragic stuff. You know, what you think about living down in Florida or North Carolina or Tennessee, and it's beautiful. It's warm. It's gorgeous. And yes, you might have to deal with, you know, some floodings from time to time or the occasional hurricane. Well, we don't get the hurricanes up here, but we do get the blizzards and the snow. It's definitely something to contend with. And hopefully it all just melts and goes away.
It'll come south. So everywhere you go, you're going to have your natural disasters that you have to deal with, right? Or in southeast, you get all the hurricanes. Out west, you get the earthquakes. In the middle, you get all the tornadoes. But I mean, everywhere you go, you're going to have to deal with that. But I mean, kudos to you for keep braving those winters year after year.
Yeah,
because it is a lot.
To quote Craig, one of my favorite guests that we had, Craig, it's a lot.
It's what? It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's just a lot, period. Hey, with that being said, I tossed a recommendation for a show your way this past week. Kim's Convenience. Kim's Convenience. You know, it's made its way to Netflix and YouTube now. It was a show on the CBC for quite some time, debuted, I think, back in 2016 or so. Still might be on regular day-to-day, but the fact that you could grab them online, that it's a pretty funny show. It's a good show. You like that one.
I liked it. I didn't know it was on Netflix. I'm actually catching it on YouTube. So for those of you who don't know, JC sent over this link about a show on YouTube, and I guess now it's on Netflix called Kim's Convenience. And I guess it is about a Korean convenience store owner in Toronto. Is that right?
That's right.
Dude, the writing is awesome on that show.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
It's really good. It really is good. I'm on the third episode, and I'm loving it. So, yeah, thank you for that recommendation. Now I'm going to catch it on Netflix because, again, I just didn't know it was on there.
Hey, talking about across the brief pond and lake right there, right?
Brief. Okay, go ahead.
A little mini journey across Wawuda, you know, not the big pond of the Atlantic. But big shout-out going out to Ari Shapiro. He's an independent writer someone that follows me, and I follow him on Twitter. He's got a lot of good stuff going on. Check him out, Ari Shapiro. Great guy there. He recently liked one of the podcasts. He's up in Toronto as well. So big thanks and kudos to following the show, Ari. Really appreciate it.
Does he watch Kim's Convenience?
I don't know. You know, the show is controversial to some people due to the nature of the some of the cultural references and things, but it's a different flavor for different folk. I enjoy really it, good. You know.
I really enjoy it. Yeah. There's another show. I think it's more well known. It's called Fresh Off the Boat. I think it's called.
Okay.
Or Off the Boat or Fresh Off the Boat. It is about a Korean family in Orlando, Florida, and it's funny because I'm thinking Orlando. Let me go ahead and watch that show. And all the shots are nowhere near Orlando. I saw some mountains on the show one time. And I'm like, Orlando doesn't have. I mean, maybe Splash Mountain, you know, but not any real mountains. But that show's all right. But this one is a lot better. The writing is pretty good. It's not your slapstick kind of comedy. You really have to think about what they're saying, but it's actually pretty good. So thank you for that. I don't know what about culturally messed up.
Do me a favor real quick. Say the word Orlando.
Orlando. So every time. Got it. So anytime you say Orlando, that will come up.
Well, maybe. Right. Maybe.
Maybe.
We're going to see how fast my fingers are with that one.
You got to be ready for that. All right.
So I did prepare something I want to toss your way today. You know, as we talk about HR technology and some of the advancements that the industry is going through and some of the changes that we're facing in our HR departments, and we dance around the topic from time to time, one of the things that we really have to take a look at as leaders and managers and as full-on teams of men, women, ladies, and gentlemen, full teams,
Don't assume.
We had 20 minutes on this at the back end of the last show. So as complete teams, we need to make a decision on who we're going to purchase as a vendor, right? Okay. To help us out with our progression in technology. Mm-hmm. With that, as you start to browse online a little bit, there's some stuff out there going back a couple years that's pretty strong. I want to highlight this. Okay. This is from a professional called Jason Averbrook. He's out of Manhattan Beach, California. You can find him on Twitter at jasonaverbook.com. Sorry, I said your name wrong the first time. So that's at JASONAVERBOOK. He spoke at SHRM India 2016 on the HR innovation in the age of technology. It's a long piece. It is. I'm not going to lie. It's like the entire presentation that he did. But within there, he hits a key point that rings true with me that I kind of want to hone in on for the show today. All right.
Okay.
Now, we're talking specifically about trying to find that new technology, trying to make the decision on what we're going to gravitate towards. And here we are. We're at quarter one. You know, some decisions probably may have had to have been made, but we might be making some key decisions between now and April, if not maybe a little bit later on this year as we continue mm-hmm. to evolve. We're going to need to put all the proper pieces together. I grabbed a snippet from his video here. The focus of his discussion is the importance of storytellers and design thinking in HR technology. So it's not just simply saying, yeah, go ahead, take them files, put it all together and put it on this thing here, and then we got a zippy drive. No, you know, it's a little bit more than that. So from SHRM India, going back a couple years to 2016, but still very relevant, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jason Averbrook without his knowledge on the show here. I'm just going to play. Yeah, I'm going to. This is approximately around 24 minutes in on his presentation.
Storytellers. Okay. This is one of the most sought after skills. And if you can get good at this, you're going to make a lot of money. Why is this so important right now? Because we have more data than we've ever had. And people are dying to understand what it means. But to hand them a report doesn't work. They need someone to tell them a story in their language. So how do I tell a story that says, this data shows me that 54% of people in India care about choosing the right vendor, yet no one has a strategy? How do I tell that story in a good way? Now, take that back to HR. Knowledge. Where do I have all my policies and procedures stored? My intranet, the black hole. What are my collaboration tools? Email, phone, maybe, next door. Where are my analytics? Another whole system, maybe. And then where's the transaction? Another system, maybe. So do you see what we've done? We haven't applied design thinking to HR. We've just thrown stuff out there and expect people to use it. So when we think about this, this is so crucial going forward. How do I create these journeys?
So that journey in technology, that actual design thinking, going into that infrastructure of what then becomes the HR technology, right? So a lot of times what we're leaning on is that particular vendor to provide the methodologies behind the scenes to make this happen. But as we grow internally and learn a little bit more about the technology that we're using, especially as we're going to start to lean on it more, it becomes more essential to start to understand some of these processes and methodologies in some cases on how those vendors come to the table and aggregate that data. Before I continue, Rick, over to you. What do you think about what Jason had to say there?
Well, I think we talked about this a few months ago about what do we do with all the data that we have. So we briefly talked about it a few episodes. Actually, no, it was more than a few episodes ago. And what we talked about is that for the past 10 years, we worked so hard to collect all this data. And now that we have it, we don't know what to do with it. And when actually, I think it was the Young Professionals. So, with,
but this here is kind of a little bit of a different take on that. It's okay. Now we know what these assets are, and we're moving forward in the discussions now and the negotiations with finding a vendor and deciding what to do with all these different resources. And instead of just saying, okay, you know, I've quantified, I've qualified all my data sets. I know exactly what I have on hand. Here's a full inventory. What do you want to do with that now? And have you found the right vendor and the right software to do what you need with that information. So sometimes it's not always on the shoulders of the software vendor that you turn to. Sometimes we still have to make those a little bit of research applicable in our world so that we're a little more familiar with exactly what it is we're going to go find. Just because the guy down the street uses an HRIS system from one of the major vendors that could be a Maitland or something, that's great. That's cool. Works for him. Does it work for me? You know?
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, so with that, you know, and that goes back to 2016, that real emphasis on critically thinking as a design thinker in regards to your HR data technology sets. Now, fast forward, 2018. On the back end of 2018, there was a lot of discussion and some big stuff coming out, specifically from Natasha Iskander. She's the Associate Professor of Urban Planning and Public Service at New York University, but she kind of rocked the world of design theory a little bit and software production and then also the way that we critically view the setup within our organizations. And what she tackled was design thinking and how it is fundamentally conservative and preserves the status quo rather than affording the process the opportunity to be a little bit more interpretive or collaborative.
So take a step back. So do you see what's happening here, JC?
Tell me.
There is so much technology, so much innovation, so much data mining that we now need to go back to that human element to not necessarily tell a story, not necessarily interpret it, but no, actually that's what it is. Interpret the data, and how do you create that story to convey that message to your stakeholders?
Well, exactly. Getting the right people in place within your organization to properly convey the message to your software vendors, to those contract entities on your requirements, your needs, and specifically where you're looking to go from A to W in the process. I'm sorry, you were saying?
So for somebody like me, somebody in HR, I got to take a step back. And to me, I can't think about what we need right now. I have to start thinking about what I'm going to need in 5 years, what kind of an employee, what kind of a talent I'm going to need in 5-10 years. And that's what we're going to need. We're going to need somebody who can take this information, probably somebody with a liberal arts degree, some kind of a degree where you could take all that information and paint a picture to where somebody else, a stakeholder, a customer, a CEO can see that picture and connect those dots. But what's going to happen is technology keeps evolving every single day. In my day job just recently, the past couple of weeks, we just finished trying to find a vendor, HRIS vendor, and that was painstaking. Oh, man. It's just so many bells and whistles that everybody has. You don't even know about things you didn't know you needed, right?
Or you thought you might need because they upsold you on something.
But that's the thing, right? Then you have to take a step back and think about, is this something I really need, or am I just impressed by the red light?
Exactly.
Am I just impressed by the laser light? So yeah, you do need some critical thinkers, and as technology continues to evolve, it's only going to get harder. Again, you need that translator. And
that
it's funny,
storyteller, about that translator, that person that could take the needs and requirements of the human resources department, convey that from a technological perspective, but then completely understand your business process at the same time, but understand the language and the nature of where these developers and software people are coming from. So here today, we're just going to kind of continue to cut through that a little bit. I don't know if you want to open up a lot more about some of your experiences in talking with them, but this is kind of dissecting that part of the process, because we haven't had to deal with a lot of technology in HR. Sometimes it's just been gifted or handed to us or decided for us years in advance, and it's just something
reactive
that you've been dealing with in a reactive measure. Exactly correct.
Yeah.
So while the first person, Jason Averbuch, was talking about the critical need for storytellers and design thinking in HR data technology, Natasha Iskander was coming from a different perspective, and she's she's coming from it from urban planning and public service, but it's a theory that then crossed over into the mindset of some of the software vendors out there. So this comes directly from the Harvard Business Review back in 2018, September 2018. And here's a quote from her article there. It's titled, "Design Thinking is Fundamentally Conservative and Preserves the Status Quo," September of 2018. She states, I quote, "When the designer acts as a gatekeeper for the meanings that are included in the design process, the potential for connections becomes limited, not only to what the designer views as significant, but also to the relationships that he or she could manage." Okay. The author rather prefers interpretive engagement. And it's a very long piece. I'm summarizing, but if you look up her article, it's a long piece. It's a good read. Just kind of delves a bit more into that thought process, right? But she states that she prefers the interpretive engagement. She's described it as a process of collaborative and wide-ranging interpretation where participants revisit the understandings they have about themselves and others, as well as about the changing world that they live in. So if you extrapolate that and put it into the thought process of the evolving technology within the HR suite, if you take critical design thinking in the standard linear process and apply it to that, it's gonna work. You still need proper program managers in place to make it happen. Yeah. But she brings up a fantastic point in regards to interpretive engagement, that being affording you and your team the opportunity to talk about things holistically, to look at this from a bigger picture, maybe the bigger business need of the organization, but then also maybe the very specific needs of the generalists and specialists that are going to be doing this work every day.
I agree with her. Actually, I agree with both. I really do agree with both. So there, you don't want to be the gatekeeper of information or the exchange of information. But I understand why somebody would feel like they have to keep everything in order, right? Because if not, if you have no order with it, you're going to spend so much time trying to understand the translation that you're not going to make any kind of traction in whatever project you're working on. So there has to be a good balance, right?
Right.
So there has to be a structure to where people understand and they know where their borders are. Kind of a little bit fuzzy with the borders, but at the same time, it gives them that go ahead to kind of step over that line to see what happens, right? So in what she's saying, yes. And what he's saying, yes as well, because when you're trying to put together the end game, right? You look at what the goal is, and then you start working backwards. You want to make sure that when you put all these processes in place, they communicate well with each other. So if I can give you a great example, I didn't see Orlando.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm sorry. All right. So you had the look in your eye.
I did. So I got a great example. So whenever, organizations do this, we hire somebody, right? And it's once we hire somebody and they start, we put in their information into our HRIS system. Let's say PeopleSoft for right now. That's what we use right now.
Okay.
Through their life cycle of their career, depending where they go, you have to keep adding information to different buckets and different silos, right? Because they don't talk to each other. So when you bring somebody in, your organization is so big that you got different silos and different areas of the organization that this person has to touch in order for he or she to do good work and exhibit their talents, that it's you just have to work in those different types of different silos and put that information in. Now, if you take a step back, think about it holistically, and you take a look at what you want this person to do, the end game is going to be that you and your team are going to put this together. Is as soon as you put that person and you hire that person in, it doesn't matter where in the organization you bring up that person's name, you can see their profile, like in Facebook,
yep,
or LinkedIn,
gotcha,
or Twitter. So it's I think from what both of them are talking about, they're trying to solve the same issue. They're just trying to make sure that how you get to the solution of that problem is the most efficient way possible. So I agree with both.
So this is where the culmination of everything comes together, and the reason for laying the base of this so far. Just like you said, we talked about the importance of data, data integrity, good data in, good data out in a previous show. We've laid the base with Jason talking about the need for storytellers in the organization, the need for critical design thinking moving forward. We've heard the quotes from Natasha here in regards to how design thinking might be outdated, how interpretive engagement might be a little bit better. And this whole time, we're just doing this so that we could get that basis and understanding of that stakeholder, that vendor, that person that I'm going to be interfacing with when we go to sign these contracts before I walk into the room. So that's where I'm angling from today. Okay. And at the end here, we're going to fire it back directly into the HR team. And here's part of my recommendation. Now, one of the standards that are out there for a lot of these software developers, now, whether or not you find this out during the contract process, that's going to be completely and entirely up to you. It's all about asking the right questions along the way. And there part of that comes down to understanding the development methodology of the vendor that you choose to go with. Are they going to really just be a plug-and-play entity where you sign the check, they come in, they force it down the throats of everyone, give them a PDF, and they walk away? And now you're in a new world.
A PDF.
A whole new world.
I wish it was that easy.
Are they going to be a fly-by-night? Are they someone that's going to develop something in an Access database, and they're a small company that could then provide maybe some scripting over top that to make it feel flashy and goody and get you heading down a different path? Or are they using the Agile software development method? Now, this is a standard that's out there. Pardon me.
You're dying.
Yeah, I just need a little more tea. Yeah, no, I'm on the back end of a lot of bad snow, you know?
Okay, all right. You're allergic to snow. Got it.
Yeah, I need to move. Just another sip of the black tea right there. So talking about the Agile software development, okay? This simply refers to a group of software development methodologies based on iterative development, where requirements and solutions evolve through collaboration between self-organizing cross-functional teams.
Okay.
Iterative, incremental, and evolutionary. Now, most agile development methods break product development work into small increments, and that minimizes the amount of upfront planning and design. These iterations, or sprints, as they call them, are short time frames, time boxes, that typically last anywhere from 1 to 4 weeks in time. Okay. Now, inclusive models can be used to improve the communication which you have with your project stakeholders. Stakeholders can be active participants in modeling this software and the data migration that you're going through if the developers are willing to work with those inclusive models, which the Agile software development method leans towards and lends. But it's important to remember through this, it really depends on your crowd, your crew, and your team, okay?
Mm-hmm.
End result, we're moving forward with a storyteller-based approach, right? We're aggregating feedback from the actual users, our team members, including this in our software design sprints then. We're communicating those changes, and contractually, we're negotiating or working in terms with our vendor for a soft rollout with emphasis on internal education and training. So before I continue on that, because this does get to a deeper point, that communication, really, really, really key, not just internally, not just with that key project manager or key storyteller, or key stakeholder that's going to step up from our organization, but also with that key member of that software team that we're directly working with.
This is why I agree with the whole holistic view of it, because it's once you start getting into the nitty gritty of it, trying to figure out which is the software company you want to go with, you get so knee deep into the details that you almost forget the reason you're there in the first place. So somebody has to take a step back and have that 30,000 foot view and say, wait, what? Let's not focus on what this is going to solve right now. But remember how our storytelling CEO told us what she wants. She wants to be able to do X, Y, Z by X date. So we want to make sure that three things happen. Are we able to use this information by what the CEO wants to do? Is it going to be easy for us as the HR people to implement it? But more importantly, what's going to be the experience of the end user, which is not just us.
And that right there comes down to like that project lead or the main storyteller, that the main person that's aggregating this information, playing point with your contract vendor, to make sure that they don't just obtain the story from the CEO. That's part mm-hmm. of the overall goal of the project, but the individual stories of the individual users, what are yep. some of the pain points? What are some of those heavy leverages? Your project manager at a lot of these software vendors that you wind up talking to, they're going to guide you through this process. But here, even if you're a mid-level to smaller organization, you don't deal with this on a regular basis, this show right here is going to help bring you into the know and understanding mm-hmm. that logic and process that they go through on that software side.
And who you should have in your team to actually implement.
Absolutely. Or if you're going to be wearing multiple hats, some of the things you might want to consider. Now, look, at some point, the end users have to know in advance. The mm-hmm. systems will completely switch over to this newly designed technological business model. But through communication and the agile sprint process, it's then essential for our team to stay informed and educated on developments. Now, agile, it just doesn't only apply to software development. The agile development, I want to say manifesto, in a way,
okay.
is a series of values put into place, and then it's up to the people to keep them in line to keep moving on. There's a guy on YouTube. This video is from 2018. I just grabbed a brief snippet from it. Mark Sheed, M-A-R-K-S-H-E-A-D, Mark Sheed. I believe you can find him on YouTube, Mark W. Sheed. Little intro here about Agile real quick, just to okay. help us get a little more familiar.
The Agile Manifesto is a collection of four values and 12 principles. For the purposes of this video, it's important to note that these values and principles don't specify a methodology. Both are very general. The principles simply come out of trying to follow the Agile values. Now, there are all kinds of procedures and methodologies people use to try to follow the Agile principles and values, but if your team starts focusing on those more than the actual values and principles, they're missing the point of Agile. You can't follow an Agile methodology to become Agile. You have to follow the values and principles first and foremost. Perhaps a methodology will help, but if you forget why you are following that methodology, you aren't following Agile.
So sometimes what we're going to run into when we're working directly with specific software vendors, and this is coming from a guy that used to work for a software vendor in the mm-hmm. private sector, some years of experience, I've interfaced with a multitude of vendors over the span of time, and that's kind of where I'm firing from today. The understanding the methodologies of what these software companies are working under is also going to go into the after-action report. It's going to go into, okay, we signed the contract, now what? Sprint 1, Sprint 2, Sprint 3. Here's how they're clearly defined. One of the things that we're going to find through that process is sometimes the vendor gets so bogged down in going through that entire thing and setting it all up that they lose focus on yep. some of the inclusionary methods. That's why it's very, 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 very important to have someone on staff to keep things on track.
And that's when the holistic view comes in.
That's right. Right.
Somebody's entire job to make sure let's at the end of every session, because you can't just decide what kind of program you want overnight. It takes weeks and weeks and weeks of researching, seeing how it affects every part of the organization. At the end of every session, I highly recommend that this one person who holds everybody accountable and says, whatever we just did today, does it align to these three key takeaways?
And you know, you don't necessarily want to lean on your IT guy for that, okay?
No.
Just because it's a software system and your IT yeah. guy is pretty cool and you might have a beer mm-hmm. with them every now and then, and maybe you shouldn't drink with the employees, but that's fine. You know, the IT guy, he's got a job to do. You hired him yeah. to do something very specific. The yeah. Agile development methods, and definitely please Google it, look it up. It's also something that you could employ within your organization for managing regular day-to-day projects as well. So if you come to find out that your software vendor is heading down this path, it's not a bad thing as well. But look, this isn't to say that the Agile method isn't without flaws, okay? In some software deliverables, especially the really, really big ones, it's hard to assess the effort that's going to be required at the beginning of the software development lifecycle. Now, look, there is a lack of emphasis on necessary designing and documentation, okay? And that's why it's important for our internal storyteller to bring these directly to the table, keep them at the forefront, and possibly form that internal action team of subject matter experts who can focus on document design if required. Now, Agile can sometimes turn into a lot of talk and a little action. Some people even say it's complete bullshit. And I'm not going to fight them on that. Mm-hmm. Because people that are using this development method or value system, as you say, they can easily get lost in the sauce. Because it is so loose in the very beginning.
So one thing, let's go back. So for the people that say this is complete bullshit, why do you think they say that?
Because it is a lot of talk. Because it is a lot of talk. It's a lot of interaction with people. It's putting names to processes or processes that we've used for a long time. It's formalizing or standardizing things so that other people and stakeholders are aware. And this is where it comes back to the key importance of having a point person that is the key storyteller from our side, the key project mm-hmm. manager from our side, to aggregate the stories from our entire staff to then relay that the proper way. Otherwise, a lot of times, some of the initial meetings, you could get bogged down pretty far. And now I'm past the point of talking about, you know, the initial demo, the initial upsell conversation. Past the point of maybe even signing the contract. Now we're moving into development. These are some of the things that you might want to think about while you're going through that contract process. And as you're moving towards development, understanding, okay, as a software vendor, do you use the Agile method? Do you code as per the Agile values? Are you an Agile value-based entity, etc.? And it kind of gives you a better understanding of how they're going to build that out, how they're going to communicate with you, and then some of the after-action reports that go from that. So that's where, in that start phase, to very specifically answer your question, in that start phase, when there's a lot of talk and a lot of development and a lot of pie-in-the-sky, magic eraser-type stuff going on, that's where a lot of people see bullshit, okay?
Yeah.
I signed the contract. I'm getting you the check. I want the stuff done by May. Totally good.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not aware of some of the part of the process, you might not view every single step of the way the same. And everyone deals with this method completely differently.
So that's why it's important at the beginning of that process, of that journey, that you give everybody a full training. Or an introduction of what this method does, what it is, and what it does, and what kind of pitfalls you can expect or obstacles you can expect, because they can process it in their own way before we get to those obstacles, before we get to those pitfalls, because a lot of people kind of get stuck when they hit it. A lot of people plow through it. Some other people, when they see an obstacle, they just take some time to process it. That's why it's a good idea to start off each journey, each discovery meeting or discovery project, by explaining what that Agile method does. More importantly, where it comes from. Do you happen to know who invented it or how long it's been around, that whole process?
No, off the top of my head, I'm not 100% sure. We could Google that, though.
No, me neither. I just don't know if you did or not, but I think it's a good idea.
I know I took a course on it probably about 10 years ago, and a refresher probably about 5 years ago. I'm not the guy
old. I didn't know
that. I'm not the guy that I want to say it was about 10 years ago. Maybe it was seven or eight, but it really hit us hard maybe about 4 or 5 years ago. Let's look this up real quick.
Yeah, just real quick. Let me see.
You're looking it up? Good. I'm going to keep the studio computer offline. Hey, you're looking that up, you know, Agile can sometimes turn into a lot of talk and little action, just like we were saying. It can sometimes run off the rails, and that's why it's important to have those key internal project managers, storytellers who can thread those needles, just like we're talking, keep the people informed, engage all essential and internal and external stakeholders along the way. And then from that, that's where we need to look at the use of software for our documentation. And I've got a huge recommendation on that. But before we continue, what do you got on the wiki of the Agile Development Methodology and Processor?
Dr. William Royce published a paper on this process in 1970.
There you go.
Which I think that's where it came from. A lot of the Agile Met ideas surfaced back in the 70s by Dr. William Royce. I mean, that's a lot of information on this as far as more details on it. But yeah, it goes back to the 70s, and that's when that process was put together, all in a little white paper that was created back
then. This is really, again, just a holistic, high-level understanding of the way that our vendors are going to work and interface with us, trying to find out whether or not they use this methodology or something else. This does happen to be one of the more popular ones that are out there. They might have something that, just like Jason had said right in the very beginning, maybe they're a little more old school. Maybe it's just critical design thinking. Maybe there are other methodologies that they're operating under. Maybe it's strictly just project management for them, and they don't subscribe to any single particular methodology. But comes to that, the keys of how are they doing it? How are they going to communicate on the back end? And then how are we going to get the necessary documentation to train our team? And as we've said, a lot of times you're not going to get all the documentation that you need. You buy something from the store. You bring the TV home. You unpack the TV. You hang it on your wall. There's going to be a book. There's going to be a manual inside of it. Totally good. Good to go. In your house, though, how does that smart TV interface with the other smart things that you have amongst all your other devices? How does that specifically come together inside your house? Same concept here. You buy that package from that vendor out of the box. You bring it in. How does that very specifically fit into your existing workflows? So the creation of that documentation, something that's essential. Now, office to office, things are different. Sometimes you're going to have a vault of documentation that are just Word docs that have been converted to PDFs, and that is your employee handbook. Maybe you've got a different process for putting those together. How do you do yours, Rick?
So it's specifically
the employee handbook, though, just real quick.
Well, as far as the employee handbook, it's to where I work in my day job. Exactly what Jason said. It's the black hole, right? It's just we create it, we put it out on the intranet,
and it's like Word docs on the internet, or they're converted then into PDFs or something like that, right?
No, yeah, it is. It is a Word document that was converted into a PDF. But here's the problem. Well, I don't want to see a problem with the Agile method, but here's one of the pitfalls that you can hit. So you can work really well at the beginning of that venture to put together good documents on how this software is going to work with all the other computer programs or softwares with the organization. So at the beginning, in the first 2 or 3 years, that document is nice, it flows, and you're able to see a smooth transition from department to department, from system to system. Here's where it gets dicey. 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, you've built so much on that document with every update, every other software you buy, every other thing that you buy that has to communicate. Now, 15 years later, you're going to need an engineering degree from MIT to decipher that document, right? So it's you need somebody to continually update that document and make sure you keep it down to an understandable level that the regular employee, the regular talent, the regular user is able to easily understand. And they don't spend 50% of their day trying to decipher that.
Absolutely. Now, this is coming from more of the tech world when I bring this up. Whether or not you or anyone else in the HR industry wants to take a look into this, see what the benefits are. You may even have a license for the software that I'm about to mention in-house already, and it could be used for tech manuals. It could be used for press releases or other things that other departments are doing. When we're talking about the use of software for documentation, I personally highly recommend the use of the Oxygen software product, okay? It's the Oxygen XML editor. It's a multi-platform XML editor. And there's some other stuff that goes along with that. It's also a Java application. It can run on Windows, Mac, OS X, and Linux. Okay. The website for you, if you want to look into it, they don't pay me anything to say this. I'm just someone that's used it numerous times in the past. No one pays us for shit here on this show. Trust me. But their website, www.oxy. Let's see. That's OXY. .genxml.com.
Wow.
Or it could just be oxygenxml.com, and I may have accidentally put a period in there in my notes. Sorry about that. But Oxygen, oxygenxml. Okay, those are your keywords for the Google box in the Magic computer screen. So when you type those in, it's going to take you to their software page, and check it out. I'm just going to tell you about this real quick. You can create a library of documentation, this document, and you can have multiple libraries within there. You could say that this is our employee handbook. This is our user manual. This is our forward-facing documentation. You can create multiple documents within there, have draft revisions, keep a tracked log of that. At the end of the day, you can export the data that's in there or the data that you choose to export that's in there and have that automatically converted into something that gets exported into a website. So depending on the way that you're coding your website, if you are a node-based website or something else along the way, Drupal, nodes, you know, or something else, techie people might be with me on that. This editor, you can create all the documentation you want, keep track of the revisions over the span of time, export those directly to the website, export those directly to a PDF, but everything lives in one repository. So even if you have an internal frequently asked questions for the new onboarding employee about how operations take place day to day, and this is something that's got to need to be updated, instead of having 52 documents spread across the entire land, and if our HRIS system doesn't already have something built into it to do it, this here's a fantastic product to help make that happen.
How is that any different than Dropbox?
Big difference. Okay. Aside from checking out the documents, draft revisions, you're housing them internally as needed. It's not just a shared drive. Dropbox is a shared drive, like Google Drive is just a shared drive. Yeah. This is an actual software of a primary repository with the checkout process from that. Something that's similar to it is the SharePoint product. A lot of us have bought into that. Yeah. We might enjoy that. A lot of us might think that it's complete garbage at times, and it doesn't always operate the way it's intended. Why? Maybe it's a Microsoft product. I don't hate Microsoft, but come on now. I'm saying. We've got issues with SharePoint along the way. But
it depends on your use of tool.
Oxygen is a more powerful tool. It's a more powerful tool where you could take the data that you've built in there and then export that to your SharePoint, to your website, to your intranet, to your internet, to your everything, you name it, in between. Especially if you're running a heavy, frequently asked questions internally and externally. This product is going to help make that happen. You can embed videos into it. You can embed audio into it. There's a plethora of things that you could do. So if you're going to put together a training program for your new onboard employee and you want that involved in a frequently asked question that they could turn back to and you just want a 1 or 2 minute snippet video in there, this software can help make that happen as long as you just know some of the basics of XML.
So thank you for saying that, because when you started talking about it, it sounded kind of too technical for me. I'm a free spirit kind of guy. I'm the least systematic person you'll ever meet.
You could learn this software in probably about a day.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Honest to God, Ricky Baez could start building your new employee handbook in that. You'll probably have the swing of it within the hour. And then by the end of the day, you're going to know a couple more tips and tricks that are in there. And then after 6 months, you're going to be doing some funky stuff with it. I'm telling you.
So let me ask you this. What's to stop a company? And this is just coming to me right now.
Yeah, please.
Because right now we got, it's one of the things I can't do. And I think I've said this before in the show. I am the only HR manager, HR person that will tell you this, that I can't stand policies that are too thick.
Right.
I can't send policies that are too convoluted. They're necessary, but it's just we get too much in the details. I would love to see a world where there isn't too much policies out there that you have to read. And I'm not saying that I don't like to read. All I'm saying is that sometimes they get too bogged down. isn't it better if we take this whole holistic conversation that we started the show with and we get that storyteller aspect and just have different stories to explain the policies that we have, and you just have a library full of personal videos, organizational videos that's only for the employees, that you're able to fully understand those policies in a way that's really engaging. And then you check, yeah, I saw this video, I understand that policy. I saw that video, I understand that policy. Because we get those videos right now, but it's only in addition to policies. But what do you think about a world where an organization doesn't have those written policies, just got all these videos that we have to acknowledge? What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts. When we take a look at the videos we have to watch, sometimes it's troubling. It makes me realize that I've lost the human connection with my coworkers. That cup of coffee you offered me at the beginning, it was crap. You never meant it, and that you just want me to now watch your video that you paid $52,000 for from a college kid down the road at the local community school. But that's fine. You still have employees on staff that could have helped you just with an iPhone. But it's good. I know you need me to do this, and I will do it for you diligently. And I will not turn back. You know why? I am the new employee. You can bully me or do whatever you want, and I'm going to continue to just say yes. Because I want to get paid. I just want to get paid.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a great example of a harassment video. And if you just witnessed that, you may have experienced some kind of a hostile environment at work. So I do apologize.
I'll cut the shit.
That was creepy.
We said, right, the face of the franchise gave an intro warning today, right, yeah, before the show began. So let it go. It's fine.
That is so creepy.
We built that intentionally.
No shit.
Yeah, so he asked me a question. I answered it for you. Just took a little bit longer than you expected.
No, but I mean, think about it. It's like that Jason guy is absolutely correct. If you are able to be a great storyteller as a leader, you are going to make a lot of money. It depends how you do it. But
even as a leader, Rick. Not even as a leader. Just as someone within the organization, if the leader is going to turn to Ricky Bias today and say, look, you're going to hold down your same duties, but I need to move into this realm. We need this in place by August. That's all you know. Other than knowing that they want to spend no more than X amount of dollars on the product.
Yeah.
So what's it up to you then? You need to figure it out. And how are you going to figure it out? You're going to start going online and finding all the vendors and talking to your friends. You're going to pull those in. You're going to watch a couple videos. You're going to get some demos. You're going to feel good about things. I would encourage, because everything I've talked about today is a material change to the way that HR may currently draft not just policy documentation, but then also interfacing with specific vendors along the way. Mm-hmm. It's a material critical change to our thought process. Ask them those tough questions. How do you build your software? I don't mean by your fingers and a keyboard, silly. I mean, like, how do you do it? What's your methodology? Are you just going to give me something out of the box, or are you going to customize it for me? Great, you're going to customize it. Awesome. How long is that going to take? How frequent are these meetings? Do you use a specific development method to make that happen? Hit them with those critical questions. Learn more about them and their process, because you're not going to live with it just at the point in time of contract. You're going to live with it through the data migration, through the software development, through the installation, through the training and education piece, and then the support piece on the back end. And that is a completely different program.
So, and here's what I'm going to say to that, and we've been saying it on the show since the beginning, right? You need to have that culture in the organization to where when a leader or somebody asks that question of that project manager, of that employee, that question feels comfortable enough in answering it in a way that he or she doesn't feel like there's an agenda behind that question that's being asked, right? So it's when that person feels empowered, when that person feels like there's a culture of trust, there's that phrase again, that they can answer that question That's when you can start having those crucial conversations to where this agile method would work. But you can't just have a toxic relationship in the organization and all of a sudden ask that question one day and yeah, it's going to be hunky dory. No, you need to start working with those human aspects from the beginning of
your company. Listen, some of your software vendors, they're not even going to tell you, and they are using this method. And it's up to you maybe to figure it out with some of them.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be veiled. It's not going to be something that they're going to tell you, but you're just going to live through the life cycle of it. So getting that good, clear understanding of how they think and operate definitely helps out.
Yep.
Hey, I took you down a path of something radically different today. We're currently at 55 minutes. That's all I have for you. Is there anything you have for me, Mr. Ricky Baez, if I may? What do you think about this? Just in general, what do you think about what I threw your way today?
No, it's something to think about. It really is. It's out of my wheelhouse as far as programs and stuff of that nature. But how you manage those things is something that I'm passionate about, and how you communicate that to all the different stakeholders is something that, again, I'm passionate about. So no, it's good stuff. I just hope that that the people who actually employ it, they focus on that relationship building piece first with your employees too. When you throw this out there and you're asking for that feedback, you're asking for your employees to feel the same passion about it as you do, it'll actually come back to you if you have that culture of trust there. You're 100% right.
You know, a lot of people put emphasis on PMI certifications, on the different black belts or different belt colors within lean management of program management, et cetera. Take a look at Agile. Take a look at Agile. See whether or not that some of the values of this could definitely fit within your organizations. Because it's not just what the software vendors use. It's definitely something you could use as well for that internal communication and that interpretive, collaborative method of getting together. With that being said...
Who are you picking for today?
For what?
For the game.
What
the
game?
The super
big game.
The super big game of bowls.
Oh, the super big game. I'm not going to watch. If I tune in, I'm going to watch for a play or two.
Why are you gonna watch?
I think that the team from New Orleans and Kansas City should be playing today. Yeah. I think when you may not like this, but I'm going to say it. You ready? I think when the referees in a professional sports game are not the highest paid people on the floor, on the court, on the field, you've got a problem. And here's the reason why. They can be influenced. You can buy them off. You've got a $2 trillion quarterback, highly skilled guy. Yay, yay. You've got a ref that makes $250,000 a year. Is there plausible culpability and fraud? Yeah. There's possibilities everywhere you go. Who knows? But we're living in an environment where we quite possibly could be on the precipice of learning that some of the professional sports that we enjoy are nothing more than sports entertainment. Don't you remember when you first learned Hulk Hogan wasn't a real wrestler and that it was just sports entertainment? What'd that do to your heart, Rick? Come on.
It broke it because I'm a wrestling isn't real. He's acting. It was still entertaining, though. But, it still was.
But, I mean, they're still wrestling. They're still doing stuff.
Are you saying that refs should be the highest paid people on the field?
Absolutely.
That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. Huh. Referees should be the highest paid people on the field. And then it removes all potential, plausible culpability or influence. How many people sit there and say after like the finals before the super big game today, you know, hey, these refs were paid off. These refs made a bad call. You're standing right in front of the guy and he gets bowled over and you're like, I didn't see nothing. Come on, man.
I get it.
That's
a conspiracy theory, but nobody tunes in. Like millions of people don't tune in to, okay, name one ref.
I got no, Ed Hockley.
I don't know who that is.
He's the guy with the big arms, and he says, first down. You've seen him. He wears, like, Baby Gap t-shirts, you know, with stripes on them. You know which one I'm talking about.
I don't know that, though, right? But I don't know his name because nobody tunes in for that, right? People tune in to that entertainment factor. Nobody's going to – if you paid
– So you've got the brand-new expansion team playing the biggest villains. Oh, shocking. Okay. So it's all who's going to win? The expansion team who's gearing up money for the new stadium, or the villains who are the greatest of all time? Come on.
People come on. In.
This is Hulk People Hogan Iron Sheik, brother.
You know what? So wait a minute. So still, and I will still watch that today, right? Because it
absolutely
has
entertainment value. Value.
Right. It really does.
So just call it, you know, call it what it is. It's entertainment. Wow.
You really think refs are being bought out?
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I don't know it. I don't know it. I don't 100% think it or believe it. Is it plausible? Yes. Is it logically plausible? Yes. You want to watch good football? You watch college football. That's what you watch. That's
you're right.
You've got people playing their heart out there. They're never going to play ball again. And some of them are going to go on to professional careers. Ah, cool. No problem. That's good football right there.
So let's say
I don't know
you're
about
right.
this, man. This is it's turned. It turned into a product where we found out that some of the military tribute appreciation days that they were doing were actually like sponsored and funded, and they never told anyone. I mean, there was a whole thing behind that. Little these entities being not for profit organizations, they're not for profit. They're not for profit.
Let me ask you this, JC.
Come on.
If you found out today. Because, dude, I know you're a big football fan. I know you're a Bills fan, right? I fly up there almost every year to watch a Bills game.
Yes.
So you're telling me that if you found out today that every ref at one point or another has taken a bribe, are you going to stop watching football?
No. I'd probably start watching it again a little bit more intently. It's not that I tuned out of hate. It was just like, dude, I can't watch this again. Really? After you get two or three bad calls, you're like, I'm done. I'm going to go do something else with my day. I got things to do. You know what I mean? I got to comb the cat. You know? I got laundry. Like, I got important
things. Who's your money on today? Who's your money on?
The commercials. That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah.
I swear. What about you? I'm nonpartisan in this.
I don't. So I'm just going to watch it for the entertainment value. I don't have a dog in a fight either way. Bills aren't there. Giants aren't there. Yeah, it's still the big game. I'll probably tune in for the first half, catch some commercials, and that's about it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like most people.
I would love to see the Patriots go down. They got so many rings already, and obviously going to root for the underdog, but it is what it is.
All right, so, I got something for you.
My money on the Rams.
Do you think politicians in Congress or Senate should be in those chairs for 30, 40 years?
No. There should be a rotation. To me, in my opinion,
a term limit.
There has to be a term limit. Because if you're in the same spot for about 30, 40 years, you're just a little sliver away from a dictatorship.
You know, talking about the referees and the big game and that sport got me thinking about that. Got me thinking about politicians that are just rooted into these long-term things. Yeah. I don't know, you know? I mean, just, you know what? Give them a maximum of 2 terms of 4 years apiece. Make them highly paid. Give them $1 million. $1 million every 4 years. If you stick around for 2 terms, you get $2 million. You don't get any health benefits. You don't get any long-term benefits. You don't get health care. You don't get retirement. You don't get a pension. You don't get nothing. But if you do good, you're walking away with $2 million for 8 years' worth of work. Done. Dun-dun-dun. Ain't a bad idea.
It ain't a bad idea.
What was that year that the refs went on strike? You remember? And it was just a hot mess. And volunteers.
I can't remember the year, but they were making like $20 an hour or something like that. Yeah, and then you had high school reps coming up, you know. And the funny thing was is they went out for like coin tosses and they had their hand out like they're waiting to get paid right there.
did you bring your $20?
You know.
Oh, but there was that one scene there was that one video clip where it was a somebody ran in the ball into the end zone. One ref had his hands up. Another one was all waving it away. And it was like 4 different signs from 4 different refs. It was just a hot mess. But the reason they went on strike, it was, I think, are they unionized? I don't know if they are or not.
Yeah, I have no idea.
No? Okay. I forgot why they went on strike. But yeah, that was
that one.
There's the face. Speaking of people who don't get paid.
You like that one? You like that one?
There he is. Oh, dude, speaking about not getting paid, did you hear what happened in Orlando yesterday?
No. What happened in Orlando yesterday?
So a TSA worker committed suicide.
I did see the story on that. Sorry about that.
In the Orlando airport. So around 9:30 in the morning yesterday, by the time we record this and this is released on Monday, this happened on Saturday morning, 9:30 a.m. He went into the Hyatt in the Orlando airport, which is, if you've been in there, it's a big old hotel inside. And he jumped off, I don't know if it's the 10th floor or 7th floor, and committed suicide.
Very, very sad, man. It really is.
It is. It really is, and it got me thinking, and we've talked about that here on the show before about suicide and prevention and how to look for those signs, but the union and this is what got me thinking about this. The federal union there are having conversations about to see how this whole shutdown thing may have affected that. They haven't talked about it too much. But they're afraid, they're putting things and policies in place that in case there is another shutdown in a couple of weeks, that it doesn't give people any ideas who are coming down on hard times.
If anyone is having hard times like that, definitely turn to your friends, family. There are some crisis hotlines out there. And then also it's always good to look into the resources employers have. The employee assistance programs through many employers is always a good thing.
Absolutely.
Very tough, man. Very tough. Yeah. Hey, what are some of the best ways people could find us, Rick, if you don't mind me asking? I got an hour 6 on the clock here. We should get moving. Yeah.
I'm having such – wow, you're kicking me out. Nice. You can find us on Twitter at HR Podcasts or HR Talk on Twitter, Facebook. What's the other one? Instagram. You can email us at – HRtalk@biasco.com. Or look, if you go on a website, you'll be able to see all the different platforms where you can reach us, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, what's the other one? FM radio.
Player
radio.
FM. Tune in radio. On and on. There's so many that have picked us up and been really good to us. You could probably find us. I think it's on the TuneIn Radio app. We're on page 19, the fourth icon down. Thanks for the highlight there. Really appreciate that.
So, guys, go in there, give us a like, give us a comment, let us know what you think about the show. Send us an email if you want to be a guest on the show, if you have a topic for the show. But we really do appreciate the support.
Get this guy up on Twitter. Give him some feedback. Give him some of your thoughts. If you don't agree with some of the stuff that's being said on the show, or you've got an idea for an upcoming show or podcast, something like that, definitely reach out. We're certainly more than happy to help you out and have you on anytime. And, Rick, any email address or telephone numbers or anything you'd like to give out at this time?
Yes. HRtalk@biasco.com. Or you could just call us. 407. What are you doing?
Background music.
What? You can call us at 407-501-8425.
401-501.
No, 407-501-8425. Stop confusing people.
407-501-501.
8425.
HR Talk. I'm JC. That's Ricky Baez. It's been our pleasure to be here for you this week. Drive safe. Have a good night.